Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
As you wrap up the holiday season with your e-commerce business, you did amazing sales. The growth was huge. But do you feel like you're being crushed under the volumes of sales? The things that you're supposed to be enjoying, did they just make you feel like you were in over your head? It wouldn't be the case if you were using Whiplash. Modern fulfillment built to scale. As a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you can get $100 credit when signing up today. Go to getwhiplash.com/hack. Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. This is episode 299, the final episode of the 200s. Whew. All right, it's going to be fun. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a world traveler, Princeton graduate, and an entrepreneur. As co-founder and COO, he has lived in 55 countries while building his most recent business, Toptal, into a team of over 100 employees with well over $100 million in annual revenue. In this conversation, you'll learn how Toptal has scaled as a fully distributed team, no offices, and as few meetings as possible. Now, let's hack. Brendan Benishot. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Whiplash, modern fulfillment, built to ship. If you are running an e-commerce business, Whiplash is your virtual warehouse. You send your products to a Whiplash facility, and when your customers order, Whiplash sends it to them just like you would, with two slight differences. They're faster and cheaper. With warehouse facilities in Detroit, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and London, Whiplash will get your products to your customers faster, no matter where they live. Plus, Whiplash connects easily with major shopping carts like Shopify, Magento, and Bandcamp, so you can get up and running faster. Remember, holiday volumes are supposed to be something to enjoy, not to get that feeling of like being in over your head. And remember, you wouldn't be if you were using Whiplash. Contact Whiplash now so this goes down in history as the last holiday you shipped for yourself. Don't get stressed out. Get Whiplash. Go to getwhiplash.com/hack. That's getwhiplash.com/hack. And for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you'll get an exclusive $100 credit for getting started today. Go to getwhiplash.com/hack. We're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Brendan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for so much for joining me. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
I think so too.
Excellent. So let's jump into it. Brendan, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Sure. Honestly, the number one thing I think is the decision and then the ongoing decision to run a completely distributed company where we actually don't have any offices anywhere in the world. And I am quite sure that we are the largest fully distributed company in the world at this point. We don't have a single lease or a single office anywhere. And the decision to set up our company so that we could work and hire remotely was absolutely the best thing we could have done 6 years ago. And every single day it continues to be the best thing we could do. And it just means that we have this ability to go to LinkedIn or anywhere else and hire anyone. And so the global talent pool and the flexibility and not losing people when their significant other gets into medical school across the country or something like that is such a tremendous advantage. And I think it's by far in a way our biggest contributor to our success.
I love it. And how many employees do you have now at Toptal?
I don't think we released the official number, but hundreds.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not like you don't have like, people aren't listening and like, oh, they have six people working for them. You have hundreds of people.
Hundreds.
And so when you were starting this with the idea of distributed team, did you think that, well, maybe at 50 employees, we would have to get an office, or at 100? Like at a certain stage, did you think, because I know that that's what lots of people think. They think that they can bootstrap just to save money on office space for a little while, but then they have to take that step.
Yeah. Well, at first it was out of necessity, because this was sort of born out of my dorm room at Princeton, and as I'm finishing up a degree, and I didn't have time to go meet with clients or set up an office. And my co-founder was living in Palo Alto at the time. And so for us to work and for us to do this as a full-time student, like, we just had to be set up remotely. And then by the time I graduated, this company was doing about $1 million a year in revenue. And we're looking back and thinking, well, we both kind of have roots in Silicon Valley, that what feels the norm would be go to Silicon Valley, raise a big Series A, get an office, build a team there, and raise a bunch of rounds, and that will be success. But as we're looking at this, neither my co-founder nor I could see a single point in our six-month history at that point where being remote hindered anything, like whether that was collaboration or winning business or interviewing or anything like that. It didn't stop anything. And so we thought, okay, well, let's push this as long as we can. Let's set up our company now to take advantage of this as long as possible. And, you know, secretly, I hoped that would never change at the time. And I was pretty confident that it would never have to. You know, maybe if we had raised $10 million Series A or $50 million Series B or something like that, an investor could kind of force it, and it might be forced from the outside. But in my heart, absolutely, it was always, I always knew that that would be like taking 10 steps backwards, because as soon as we started doing this, and as soon as we figured out sort of the nuances of communicating remotely and over communicating and all of that, it was just a no-brainer. So I guess we went in open to it, and then every single day it just got reinforced. And then at some point it became just almost a badge of honor for us, where this is such a huge perk to people joining the company and staying in the company. We have very few turnover problems. And then we started seeing more and more people who have these tremendously successful careers leaving their companies and to join TopTal, in no small part because we are remote, where they either had to move with their significant other somewhere and they still wanted to work in a really fast-paced, hyper-growth, challenging type company with really smart people, or for us, it's been a tremendous recruiting tool. And in one of the ways that I think has been really cool is that a lot of people who have these really great careers, once they start to have kids, they realize that they want flexibility to be really great parents. And so they're finding that flexibility and everything that they want to maintain, or even, I mean, especially accelerate their career through TopTal. And so that's a tremendous advantage for us.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating because of the growth and like the size of TopTal at this point. But from the other side, it almost seems like you're like running a lifestyle business. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, you travel a lot too. It's not like you're just in an office somewhere and running all of this. Like you're a busy dude. Like you don't like to stay put, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, honestly, a lot of the company is like that. And so it depends on your definition of a lifestyle business.
I know most people think that they can travel a lot and still, but only run a business of a certain scale or magnitude.
Right.
You seem to be.
Yeah, so TopTal does well over $100 million a year in revenue at this point. And it is, I mean, it's a lifestyle business in that everybody in TopTal has a hell of a lifestyle. But in terms of a hyper growth company that will eventually IPO and see tremendous returns, it's not a lifestyle company. It's very much a hyper growth company.
That's what I mean. You have like the best of both worlds going. And so what are some of these ways? You mentioned once you guys figured out sort of communication and not over communicating, can you, like, how are you running this now?
So now we mostly use a combination of Slack and Zoom. It used to be primarily Skype, but Skype has had a lot of stability issues over recent years. And then Slack has just become a, you know, very cool tool with all sorts of easy integrations and things you can develop. And so I mean, those are our tools for the most part in terms of basic communication, and then of course some email. And we kind of, TopTel is pretty loose in terms of our infrastructure and I guess requirements, where Mondays we typically do team meetings back to back to make sure that we have a dedicated touch point and we're all on the same page about what we're doing and what we're trying to achieve. And then the rest of the week is essentially as few meetings as possible so that everybody has enough time to get things done and do heads down work. We're very proud of the fact that almost everybody at TopTel is a tremendous individual contributor. And I think that's really important and an important part of our culture. And so as you and I were chatting about before, we have as few meetings as possible. However, our approach, that doesn't mean that we don't communicate. We almost act like we have an office, and that when I need something from somebody or need to, you know, solve a problem, it's almost like I go walk over to their office and knock on their door and say, like, hey, do you have a minute? We just do that virtually, where you ping somebody on Slack and say, hey, do you have a second? And you jump on a call if you're available, and you hash it out right there. And maybe you pull in five other people onto the call, and it turns into like a big problem-solving session. But to me, that's very different from a lot of companies I've seen, where in order to get five key people on a call, that might mean, you know, 40 emails are sent back and forth trying to do scheduling, and then it gets rescheduled. And all of a sudden you need assistance just to do basic meetings to like have a touch point. And we really, really frown upon that idea. And I think that's initially, that was just something that we did because we were young 20 somethings and had lots of energy and a tremendous amount of drive. And that's carried with us now through today, where hundreds of people at TopTel are kind of operating in that same fashion. And I think it's one of the most important things you can have as a company.
Nice. I like it. So it's like you're in an office, but you're not. So it's not just Slack channels full of hundreds of people sending GIFs back and forth endlessly.
Exactly.
Or is it?
I mean, we have some dedicated or some larger Slack channels with the whole company on them, and all sorts of fun stuff happens there. But when it's time for real work, we do real work.
Fair enough. So at the beginning, you said your one thing is that decision and ongoing decision to be fully distributed. Now, every like business expert out there talks 80-20 rules.
Uh-huh.
So you're supposed to do the 20% that gets the 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Brandon, can you tell me something in your business that you are absolutely not good at?
I'm very shy and terrified of public speaking. End up doing it somewhat regularly, but usually somewhat successfully, but I definitely shy away from it. And it's been an interesting thing for me personally at the company, where I think the company benefits from when I do speak publicly, but I really hate it. And so if I personally, I kind of look at it in the 80-20 light and say, that's something I should be doing, and I think it helps the company a lot. I would love to be able to delegate it because I don't feel like I'm that good at it. But given the co-founder role and I guess just the success that I've had here, I really feel like I need to. And so that's something, even this interview, I was nervous before. I'm nervous now. And I kind of have to work through that regularly.
Nice. You don't sound nervous, so it's good. I like that.
Well, that's good. Nobody ever believes me when I say that, but so I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah. So are you the type of person though, that like to get better at it, are you just going to try and do it more, or are you like, do you like read up on it and try and, or get like a mentor or somebody to like push you through it?
I've never had a mentor. My approach to things like this is usually kind of it's like CBT, like from what I understand of like cognitive behavioral therapy. And so that theory is there, where it's essentially it's exposure therapy, where you start with something small. If you're terrified of talking to people, then start with something small, like asking a stranger what time it is, and think about it before, like what's the worst that can happen? What am I expecting to happen, et cetera, then go do it. Then afterward, it probably went fine, even if you were terrified, and you think about like, okay, what was the worst thing that did happen? And like, should I have been scared of this going into it? And you start very, very small with things like that. And then over time it gets bigger and bigger, and eventually you're doing keynotes and things and you're getting through it and everything is okay.
Sky isn't falling, Brandon.
Exactly.
That's cool though. That's, and so start small, and especially because you see the benefit to your company to do it. So that kind of is the momentum behind you to push you to do it.
Yeah. It's that, and at least for me, it's exhilarating. You know, it's, I find it very stressful, but some, like midway through whatever interview or speaking engagement, you've kind of forgotten about how stressful it is. And like you're, it's a rush. And then you leave and you're like, wow, that was actually really awesome. Like that felt really good. It's adrenaline or whatever. And some part of that drives it as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. I also think of it as, because I have the same fear and I'm pushing myself through it, but it frustrates me when I watch other people that are so good up there and just so confident. And it's like, I should be able to do that too. It's not that
hard. You know, every single person who I think has just this innate ability to be amazing in front of people, every single time I've sat down with them, I think they're more scared than I am. And you, even I think Tim Ferriss and some like very, very good speakers that I've listened to some interviews from recently, they all say the same thing. One of my best friends is a professional stand-up comedian, and he in front of people, I'm just unbelievably talented. And I had a one-on-one with him recently where he admitted that, you know, he goes through his own personal hell practically every single time right before he gets in front of people, and the last person you'd expect.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Okay, Brandon, we're going to move to hiring if we can.
Sure.
You're the guy I want to talk to about hiring, because you hire freelancers on one side of the business through the marketplace, right? And then also within your own company, employees. Mm-hmm. So with the freelancers that you, so TopTal, for people that don't know, you can go there and hire talented freelancers, but they're handpicked by TopTal themselves, right? So you guys hire less than 3% of applicants to become freelancers.
Yeah, it's actually about 1.3%. But
and so unlike other sites out there, there's Freelancer and Upwork and stuff, who can just, anybody can go on and become part of the marketplace. You guys sort of source through them first. So can you tell me why this number is like 1.3% or so? Why is it so low, and what's keeping people back?
Sure. Well, the number is the result of basic math. You have the number of people accepted over the number of people who applied. So I think that's an important distinction, because it's not like we said 3% or 1.3% is somehow the magic number, or it sounds great or something like that. It's really the result of a recruiting and screening process that we established 6 years ago and refined ever since, where we said anybody who passes this is going to be a tremendous and tremendously driven problem solver. And these are the types of people we'd want to work with on an engineering team. And our hypothesis is these are the types of people that others in the US, startups, Fortune 500s, Global 2000, et cetera, are going to want to work with. And as core team members, not somebody who you just hire and give kind of your easy projects that you don't want to do to. These are people who are shoulder to shoulder with you, and maybe even better and ahead of you. So to answer your question, the screening processes that we look at encompass everything from personality and communication abilities. Then we look at sort of raw problem solving ability or brain power. And then we do technical interviews, where that's actually looking at your, how you solve problems, how you approach things with somebody else there. And then we do sample projects with everybody to see how it all adds up. And so this is a several step process. It involves many people, all of whom are experts in the given field. And when you map out the number of people who are actually able to make it through each step, it gets pretty small by the end. And the number of people who have passed through this process, and we're screening over 100,000 engineering applicants per year at this point, is in the single digit percents.
Wow. It's impressive. So 6 years ago, when you started with TopTal, was there ever a thought that it was maybe too rigorous of, because like when you, if you're at 1.3% and you were around then before, I mean, that means for the first 100 people, you found one person. Was it ever like, Brandon, maybe we should be a little less rigid right now?
Not really. You know, there were certainly times where it felt like a whole lot of work to only get, you know, a couple of people. However, one of the fundamental principles of TopTal is that we can just never be in a position where we're sending somebody to a client, representing them as an expert, if we know that they aren't, or if we don't know that they are. And so we've had to take a very principled approach to this and never cut corners. Even my people I went to school with or friends who I know, I have an idea of how smart they are and I know how professional they are and I know that they will do amazing here. Everybody goes through the same process. We don't cut any corners here, because if we did and this started becoming a problem at TopTel, we'd lose everything in terms of credibility. And with a company like this, that's all you have.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's, you never wanted to, you always wanted to differentiate yourselves from the others in the marketplace by not having people that are for one-off jobs you don't want to do.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. There are plenty of open freelance marketplaces where you can hire those types of people. Where it becomes extremely difficult is if you want to hire somebody to work on your core team. Like you want to hire somebody like Google hires. The problem is there aren't very many of those people relative to the demand in the world. And most of those people already have a bunch of job offers and are also employed by Google, Facebook, Uber, et cetera. And so our approach has been trying to solve that problem on a global level and take advantage of the fact that the world is truly starting to become very flat. And with communication tools like Slack and collaboration tools like GitHub, et cetera, you can work from anywhere in the world. And so a lot of these traditional hiring barriers just don't exist anymore.
Right. I love it. So let's take this and segue it now into projects, if we can. Let's take all those employees you have and use them to, I want to know the process that you go through. I'm sure it's changed over the 6 years, but I'd like to know the process you go through personally, Brandon, but also like as COO, to determine when a new project, so that can be any sort of new project within the company that you want to take on. But what is the process? Like, is it a written process or an internal gut sort of process you go through to determine when a new project is worth yours and your team's time, energy, and resources?
Sure. That's a really great question, because it's really important to us that, because we want to be around for 10, 20 years and beyond. This isn't a quick flip or anything like that. So it's really important that when we work with clients, that the clients are successful. We're not trying to do a one-off, we'll take your money and we don't really care what happens type play. This is from the very first person that you engage with at TopTel, we want to become your kind of go-to place for hiring elite technical talent for the rest of your life. And so that means that we have to kind of create a high barrier to when we can actually start working with somebody. If we get a sense that you're not going to be successful here, then we'll be very flat out about that. And that's, we do that all day long. Actually, on our sales team, our inbound sales team, where thousands of companies are coming to us every week asking to engage TopTel engineers or designers, et cetera, to work on their projects, we don't think of that team as much, like the job isn't sales. The job is filtering, where way more people are coming wanting to hire. But the way the TopTel is set up, where it's set up for maximum flexibility, where you are engaging an engineer or team of engineers directly, that's a lot of responsibility and you can get into a lot of trouble. So if you don't know what you're doing and you hire a team of engineers, you can kind of mislead them or ask them to build something that doesn't make any sense, or then rebuild something, or maybe build in circles. And if you're not careful, a lot of time can go by and you will have spent a lot of money and not have accomplished any of your goals because you didn't know what you're doing. You didn't know what your goals were from the outset. And so we have to be very careful and very tactful as we approach this every single day with hundreds or thousands of clients. And so the people who, when we decide to engage with a client or engage with a project, we're investing in their success because it's our success as well.
I like that. You're investing in their success. Cause if it doesn't work for them in the long run, then it's not going to continue to work for you. So how does this though, when you say you have to be very strategic and very sort of like tactical about it and know what you're doing when you're sending the team in to do something, what is it that determines that? Like, what is it that determines when this new like project is worth it?
Mostly it's the people leading the project on the client side. And so, I mean, you get a range of everything from a kid who has $1,000 and is asking you to build him Uber and to on the other side, you could be talking to kind of the largest companies in the world. And they're like, you're looking at a 6 month, $10 million project. In both of those cases, it comes down to the people that we're going to be working with for the project itself. And the, you know, somebody in the middle who might be a startup who just raised $1 million or something like that, that might be a really great client for TopTel because they might be technical, they might know how to lead engineering teams, they might have done this a bunch of times in the past, or at the very least, they're humble and smart and driven and willing to learn and not going in kind of running with their head down. And so, I mean, we kind of have to approach it on a case-by-case basis, but those are the types of things that we look for.
Nice. I like it. I like it. All right. Brandon, this has been an absolute blast, man. I want to just wrap up on one final question for you.
Okay.
And it's going to be kind of tough. It's the entrepreneurial gap is this idea I'm working with that as entrepreneurs, we are always seem to be projecting our successes into the future. So in 3 months, when you hit that metric, in 6 months, when you stand on that stage, that's when you'll see yourself as successful. Yet you and I both know that minutes before you complete that goal, you're going to set five bigger ones into the future, which I agree we need to do. But at the same time, we end up, it's like walking towards the horizon. The further you walk, the further away it gets.
From
the outside, Brandon, you look like uber successful. You have a massive, amazing hyper growth business and you get to work from anywhere in the world. Yet I know that you still, this is a long-term play. This is something you want to keep going and keep growing. So I would love it if you could right now stop and look behind you, the highs, the lows, the wins and the losses, but tell me how you feel about your fairly short journey at this point up until today.
Sure. Well, I'm extremely proud of it. I'm extremely proud of the team that we've built, and I'm extremely proud of the successes that we've had. You know, I love this quote from the COO at Box, which is, I'm paraphrasing, if you're going to go fast enough to succeed, you're going to make mistakes. And if you're not making mistakes, then you're going too slow and you'll never win. So it's really about how you deal with those mistakes that's key. And the reason I'm proud of TopTel, like, of course, the big numbers and the impact on the world, all of that is great. However, I think we've done a really good job being extremely experimental and pushing boundaries and not always getting the results that we want, but quickly figuring that out and quickly figuring out a plan B and doubling down on that. And every single day, just fighting and not always winning, but certainly winning more times than not.
Excellent. I love it, man. I love it. So we've got to talk about TopTel just sort of in passing. Can you sort of give the elevator pitch to the listener?
Sure. We're a network of the top 2% of software engineers and designers all over the world, and companies like Emirates and Harvard Medical School and Shopify and hedge funds and government agencies, et cetera, hire us to join their teams and help solve some of their toughest technical problems.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So TopTel.com is the website. I believe you are on Facebook, facebook.com/Brendan. I will link to that in the show notes.
Can we link to something else?
Sure.
TopTel. Well,
what do you have for social media?
Quora is probably the best one. Nice. Yeah.
Excellent.
Big Quora user.
Very cool. Very cool. We will track that down. So Brendan, once again, man, thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly, and please just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome to watch.
Thank you very much. It was nice meeting you.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Brendan, once again, I thank you so much for taking the time to join me. I thank you for sharing so openly with me and with the listener out there. And you out there listening, I hope you got as much out of that as I did. It was an interesting conversation that went in some, he's really unique in the business that they're building. The way they're scaling so rapidly, absolutely with no funding, and then also the fact that they are a fully distributed team, and the fact that Brendan like travels the world as he builds this business. I love it. I love that he is doing so many things that seem so counterintuitive to building and growing a business to this size and magnitude, and he's doing it so successfully. So it was fun to go and be a part of the conversation. Now we've reached the point in the show where I need to go back. I need to go back and I need to listen to it as you got to listen to it out there and see if I could find something. So I went back and then I went back again and then I went back again. That third time that I went through the conversation, there was something that Brendan said that was so very, very clear. I'm not actually sure how I missed it the first couple times, because when I heard it, it was so very, very clear. It was that one thing that Brendan said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
It's exposure therapy, where you start with something small. If you're terrified of talking to people, then start with something small, like asking a stranger what time it is, and think about it before, like, what's the worst that can happen? What am I expecting to happen, et cetera? Then go do it. Then afterward, it probably went fine, even if you were terrified. And you think about, like, okay, what was the worst thing that did happen? And, like, should I have been scared of this going into it? And you start very, very small with things like that. And then over time, it gets bigger and bigger. And eventually, you're doing keynotes and things, and you're getting through it, and everything is okay.
And that's the hack. Brendan. I love this. This is one thing I have to say. I'm still shocked that you said this. So it's really, really cool that you shared this with us. But as we lead in, this is the second last episode of 2016, and we're heading into 2017. And I know you're out there listening, and there's something that just freaks you out. That just, like, I can't do that. And you want to, but you just don't think that you can. This is it. Exposure therapy. Take what it is. Let's take Brendan's public speaking. I had the same issue with public speaking, and I've done it now, and I push myself through it, obviously, just with podcasting and things in general. I've had to force myself to learn how to do it and get comfortable at it, but it's just starting with something small. So it's not starting with a keynote, as Brendan says. He's like, literally start with walking up to somebody and talking to them. And then walk up to two people and slowly build it out. And it's this whole idea of what is the worst that can happen. Usually when we think of that, like, our brain can go 1,000 different ways and say all this stuff. But when you actually try and write down, like, what's the worst that can happen? And do that. Write it down in your notebook, on your desktop, wherever it happens to be. And then go talk to that one person. And then come back. The worst thing that could happen probably did not happen. It usually never does. But it's something that holds us back from doing such small things that step up and step up and step up to these big, big goals and dreams and things that we need to overcome to accomplish the things that we want to accomplish, right? Like, public speaking is huge. Speaking in general, making sales, just reaching out to people as an entrepreneur, you have to be able to do these things. I don't mean you have to be able to do them right this second, but ultimately, to get to where you want to go, you have to learn how to do these things. And you're going to learn how to do them, like Brendan said, through exposure therapy. Start small. Write down what's the worst that can happen. Start a little bit bigger. Look back. See if that actually happened, those worst things. It probably didn't. Continually, gradually scale up to bigger and bigger things. Brendan, thank you so much. All right. This has been an absolute blast. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. I've made a plan. I sent out an email a couple weeks ago asking what the one thing is that I could help you with in the new year to sort of scale, build your business, grow your business, do whatever it is you want to accomplish. I got some brilliant, brilliant responses. And I'm working out a whole sort of plan of things I'm going to write about, videos I'm going to create, and other episodes that I'm going to create to help you do just that in the new year. It's going to be fun. 2017 is going to be good for me. It's going to be good for you. And it's going to be good for Hack the Entrepreneur. I'm really, really, really looking forward to it. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. The email thing over there is you should get onto it. But we are actually moving. We're moving to a new email provider that's going to do some really cool things with automation. And email is going to get a lot more fun over there. So join up now and I'll switch you over to the new one in the new year. but hacktheentrepreneur.com, it's the place to get on there. And yeah, maybe you drop me, say hi to the welcome email. Like, I don't know, wish me a happy holidays or something. I don't know. It'll be fun. So one more episode left of the year. Episode 300 is coming up this Thursday in a couple days. And it's going to be good. Somebody I've wanted to talk to since the day I started the show. Got him on. And he's coming out episode 300. Look forward to it. It's going to be fun. All right. This has been a blast. Thank you so much for stopping by. I 100% truly appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.